This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. This week, is it title time at Tannadice on Saturday? And it's Dandy D is top six slot secured. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Twa Teams One Street. I'm Tom Duthie. And podcasting alongside me today are Alan Temple.
Hi, Thomas.
George Cran.
Hello.
And Graham Finnan.
Hello, everyone.
Right, boys. I was out, as you know, I was out yesterday with one of the founding fathers of this podcast, Liam Kennedy. So if you could just talk among yourselves for the next hour and excuse my snoring.
What would you like to talk about?
You can talk about whatever you like. I just want to sleep. I have to be honest to our listeners and viewers, because don't forget you can see us on YouTube.
George, well done, you did it.
I remembered.
Yeah, I
and
forgot,
George, so. Talking about where you can see us, you could be seeing us on a podium in the next couple of months.
Fingers crossed.
I have to read this out. We've been nominated as Best Sport Podcast in the Publisher Podcast.
That's a ruin. We're not winning. Well,
second.
Got absolutely no chance of winning.
The Publisher Podcast Awards. I do think if you get the awards wrong, they're not going to give it to you.
Can you imagine if a podcast that started off with the presenter saying he's too hungover to present and then stumbling all over the awards name beats Sky Sports? Yeah. Two different Sky Sports podcasts, one from The Chronicle down in Newcastle. I mean, they would never be able to show their faces again. Goodness me.
Yeah, but it's the personality they lack that makes us.
Absolutely, yeah. I can imagine that.
Yeah, we can take
100
Michael
to
Atherton,
one outsiders.
That's what Hussein.
Anyway, really, there's nothing worse for the viewers stroke listeners than listen to us blow our own trumpets. So let's get on with it and let's blow Dundee United's trumpet. Is it going to be party time?
Yeah, you would like to think so. Ultimately, it should be party time at some point over the next three games. It would take an inconceivable collapse now for them not to be crowned champions. But yeah, they could be de facto champions by the time you listen to this, really. If Raith Rovers lose in Inverness, then realistically, due to that huge goal difference, gulf between United and Raith Rovers, which is 36 goals, then United will be insurmountable at the top of the league. However, they can do it under their own steam, which is how I'm sure they would love to do that with a win over Ayr United, regardless of what Raith Rovers do in the Highlands, if United beat Ayr United. just to confuse things.
If United beat United, they will be United.
if United beat Ayr, let's phrase it that way, yes. Then they're effectively guaranteed to win the league due to that goal difference. Let's keep it simple. If United better Raith Rovers result, then they'll be mathematical champions and they can, and the party can start. And it's been there's been moments this season that it's been a grind. It is the championship after all, but overall, if and when they are crowned champions, they'll be worthy champions. And they've done it with a bit of panache towards the end of the season.
Yes.
I think we got the feeling that, I don't think anyone in this room has ever said, I don't think United are going to win the league. I think we've always thought
since
that they
said
would.
October, so.
Thanks very much.
I think we would.
Never doubted it.
I think we always assumed that they would just about get the job done ultimately. However, I think there was maybe a feeling looming that it was going to be limping over the line, and I wouldn't say unsatisfactory, because ultimately it was just about getting the job done, but just as kind of a slightly unsatisfying title win, because the best of it had been at the start of the season, which is always a weird sort of sensation, and wouldn't necessarily carry a great deal of momentum into the following campaign, which might have been a concern. However, they've picked up at a perfect time, and last three games, aggregate of 11-1, a 4-1 win at Morton, at Capello. Mm. Well, don't have many teams that will go to Capello and score four goals. So
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, and winning, putting five past Queen's Park, it was the possibly the team that was hardest to score against right now in the division. So that was a great result. And like you say, Capello is always a difficult place.
Yeah. So they've come through a lull, which is, let's be honest, it's kind of a traditional lull. There's a reason people talk about that period, November, December, January, as being a tough one to navigate, because it does become sludgy. It does become very hard to maintain blistering momentum. But they've ultimately come through that, and they're going to, by the looks of it, end the season with a bit of panache, a bit of style, plenty of goals, football that's enjoyable to watch, and ultimately lifting the trophy over their heads. So I think you can only see that as a big success. But let's predicate all that by saying, not quite one yet, and you know, football is a weird game, so let's not get the party hats out just yet, but looking good.
And Bear, something we touched on last week, I mean, you bet your life Raith Rovers will go to Inverness tomorrow, Friday night, determined to win. But it's perfect for the league, because if United win promotion at Tannadice, it's the biggest crowd in the division. It'll be a great atmosphere, great pictures for the brochures for next season and all that. I also think, for all that, you know that Raith are going to try, because they're professionals, that's what they do. It might be better for them if they have two rounds of fixtures to rest and recuperate before the playoffs. But they will go and try and win it in Inverness and spoil United's party day.
Yeah, they'll try and delay it for as long as possible. I mean, United, Alan's right, it started like a steam train this season. It looks like they're finishing like a steam train as well. And, you know, I'm delighted for them. I mean, they were fantastic at Morton, Tom. I watched the game, started brilliantly. You know, we'd never give Morton an inch inside that first 20 minutes, deservedly go 2-0 up. Ross Docherty, magnificent again, you know, driving the team on. He's been outstanding this season. And then what they did was, Tom, they started the second half well as well. You know, you would have expected Morton to come out and take a hold of the game, but they didn't. United killed Morton from all angles, and they were worthy winners. And you know, they are going to finish the job. If it's not this weekend, it'll certainly be the following weekend, I would suggest. I hope it is this weekend for them in front of their own fans. Mm-hmm. For me, and maybe for the league as well, you're a wee bit disappointed that it doesn't go right to the wire. I mean, I think the BBC would have liked that as well. Last day scenario after.
Yeah. Well, they've got away, United away at Airdrie, and United home with Thistle. Both of those are televised, which seem like a bit of a wasted picks now. But then again, you can't crucify BBC Scotland.
No, absolutely. You know, United, I mean, as a neutral, I mean, although obviously we're back Dundee United on this podcast, they're one of our teams, but everybody knows I'm a Dundee supporter. But as a neutral, you want it to go to the wire and be exciting. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't wish what Dundee had last season on anyone that last day scenario, because, I mean, the nerves were through the roof. So, United have been magnificent. I'm delighted for, although they haven't done anything yet, you know, I'm delighted for Jim Goodwin. You know, he's had a few knocks to contend, but he's been under the most pressure in that division by a country mile to get United promoted. I'm also delighted for the likes of Ross Docherty and Kevin Holt, who suffered big style last season with Partick Thistle. It must have been heartbreaking time for them, and it looks like they're going to get championship winners' medals, and thoroughly deserved. And United have come good at the right time, Tam. We always felt that the quality they had within their ranks would tell, and I think it has. I think you can see the difference in class between Raith Rovers and Dundee United, and they're going to run out deserved winners.
Bear's so right to pinpoint Ross Docherty. I think that was his eighth consecutive start, that Morton match, and that's the most consecutive games he started this season. I don't think it's any coincidence that has been at the same time that United have picked up the pace and brought about their best form. Craig Sybald and Ross Docherty are the best central midfield pairing in this division by a laughable distance. Just and when they play together, I mean, I was doing a bit of sort of cigarette paper maths, and it's 74% win percentage when those two start in the league. They are terrific together, and it's been a really frustrating campaign for him. Yeah. Like, I think sometimes, you know, fans can react to what was a frustrating period where Ross Docherty couldn't be relied upon to be in the team, and you know, their fans made their frustrations known to an extent on social media and things. And
shows his character, doesn't it? When you go to a new club and you get an injury and you've not had a history injury, you could easily have sort of mentally folded, but he hasn't.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, I think it's worth remembering that the player is always more frustrated than any fan or any manager. It can be really difficult for them, and Ross hasn't really got a massive history of niggling, persistent injuries. So, as well as the fact it would have been frustrating for him, it would have been you know, maddening and hard to understand, which I can imagine only adds to that feeling. So the fact that he's come good at this time is brilliant. And it's, having watched him this season, it's staggering to me that Ross Docherty has never played Premiership football. Mm. It really is. He's won League One with Partick Thistle and Ayr United, and he richly deserves this crack at it, because, so as Bear rightly says, so close to last season. And absolutely no denigration whatsoever to players that have played in the top flight or are playing in the top flight, but many of them, I would suggest, are on par or worse than Ross Docherty. So now at 31, I'd be delighted for him if he can get his crack at the top flight, because I think he's good enough from what I've seen of him.
There are more like him in the lower leagues too. I've always had this theory that, and I totally understand it, is sign a foreign player, whatever country you're in, sign a foreign player no one's ever heard of, but you big them up and it sells a few season tickets. Sign a guy from lower leagues in your own country and people thinking about buying season tickets go, But really, so a lot of good players get left behind in that way, don't they?
I think it's a mistake that, you know, relegated teams sort of can sometimes, you know, suffer from it. They don't look, when they get relegated, they look elsewhere for players instead of looking where they should be looking in the league they're in.
Yeah.
Look at the best players in the league you're in, because what you do is if you can attract them to your club, you not only buy yourself a player who's good at that level,
old
guarantee that level,
sign players for the league
you're also
in.
Damage another potential opponent's team.
The old firm has done that for
absolutely,
George.
It's not rocket science, and I think, you know, Jim Goodwin, you know, a couple of smart signings with Docherty and Kevin Holton, they've paid him back big step.
He sets the tone. Ross Docherty, almost called him Tony Docherty. Me and Alan were discussing.
You're just done the obsessed now. Two South is a thing of the
my
past.
My Docherty and his Docherty.
Earlier we were discussing the confusion of the picture gallery of the photo we have a contract with. The fact that, despite the fact if you type in Tony Docherty or Ross Docherty, it brings up all Dochertys. It was incredibly frustrating for both of us to wade through all that.
But he certainly sets the tone for the team, and it was no surprise that he set the tone at Morton. It was a wee bit of a surprise seeing him head such a good header.
I actually predicated a question to him. I actually said, you can't have scored too many headers, and he went, you'd be surprised, I've scored a few. Oh, God, that's a good start to the interview. But no, I should, he took it in good nature. But yeah, apparently he's got he's popped up with a few headers.
All right, fair enough.
About the timing.
Yeah. The big players stepped up again with Moult and Watt. I think the two of them have really... I quite enjoyed Moult's battle with Beard. Mm-hmm. It was a wee bit nasty.
Beard was a wee bit naughty. Yeah. He was very fortunate. It wasn't VAR at Morton. He might have been
quite
an early bath.
Yeah, didn't quite stick the head.
Yeah, but he actually stamped on the back.
After it. But then he was really aggressive after. It was strange.
Yeah. Did you not think that Morton knew they were losing the skill battle, so they started to get broad foot and Baird, you know, they're all wrestlers, some of the things they were getting away with. But that's Morton for you, but you need to cope with it. You need to cope with it comfortably.
Fair play to them.
The quality came.
From their own fans' point of view, if you're not matching the other team for quality, you have to put an effort in. You have to do something.
Oh, absolutely.
The worst thing is you can do nothing.
I still do think, we spoke about last week, Alan, about the Oakley factor and how he could hurt United, and he must have been delighted to see him. He wasn't playing. Jim Goodwin must have been absolutely thrilled with that.
No loose strap either, which is a big one. Yeah. He's a top left back.
Morton, as we say, they've not got a huge amount of quality in there. So, yeah, United's came to the fore certainly that night, and they were terrific. I mean, I counted inside the first 10 minutes, I think United swung about 5 balls across the Morton box inside the first 10 minutes. Now, if that's matched over the course of the game, you can imagine how many chances are going to be created. And they were just right from the off. And that's testament to what the manager has said before the game. It's testament to what they've done on the training field in the week prior to the game. And it's testament to the players to go and execute everything on the night. And it was a fantastic performance.
Is it fair to say different teams have different ways of playing well? Some grow into games and that. But United are very much, you can get a sort of a flavour of what's to come from the first 10-15 minutes. If they start off doing what Bear's just said, you know this is probably going to be a good day for them.
I think that's probably fair to say. Certainly of late, the sort of exploding out of the box and getting decent deliveries whipped in has been a characterisation, and not to get too sort of in the weeds, but that's been so effective because Watt and Molt have been able to get into the box. Whoever is the winger that's not crossing the ball has been able to get into the box as well. And that all comes from the fact that you have that partnership of Docherty and Sybil behind them. They can be trusted mm-hmm. that if there is a breakdown in play or there's a turnover, it's not going to be a catastrophe. So they've been able to get bodies into the box, utilise that quality from wide areas, and it's been effective. Fundamentally, they have better attackers than anyone else in the division. So if you can get them in dangerous positions, then you're going to have a lot of joy. And Molt and Watt have been terrific lately. They're clearly absolutely relishing this slightly tweaked style of play, but it's a bit more direct. And Louis Molt in particular just has won everything. He wins everything against even guys that are famed for being bigger and stronger and more physical. Your Broadfoot, Baird, guys like that made a career on being physical and bullying players. Molt's just, not only does he have physicality, he's just so clever. And he's dominating defenders at the moment. And I suspect, knowing his determination and pride, and I've spoke to him a fair bit this season, and he is a big character, big leader, I think he'll fancy that 20 goal mark. He's one away from it, so I don't think there'll be any element of him slowing down towards the end of the season. He, his contract technically expires in the summer. I think he is one of those players, and there are a couple that have clauses, appearance related things that would allow him, if he wishes to stay for another season. I think he'll want his crack at the Premiership, and he'll want to keep that momentum building going into next season. So I don't think there'll be any element of him slowing down. I don't think there'll be any element of many players slowing down, to be honest. There's a lot to play for, whether it's their futures or a points total or whatever. So even if they do win that league.
Right. And George, I mean, I haven't said it for a few weeks, so I'm going to say it. Well done to Jim Goodwin. And that thing we're saying, there is a train of thought that when you're the big team in a lower league, win the battle and then start to play. But he seems to recognise, let's start to play right from the beginning. And that's quite brave. But also, I mean, to all of you, he's conducted himself very well this season. He's been the same during the difficult periods as he has been in the high ones.
Well, we saw that watching the game on Friday night.
But you do still have the league to win, Jim.
Yeah. United go... start sticking the goals away, and it doesn't change. There's not even a smile. There's no fist pump or anything. He just kind of stands there. I wouldn't mind seeing a wee bit, but that kind of speaks to what you said about him keeping steady all season.
I must admit, I can't be doing my managers being over animated. They've got a job to do. I want to see my manager concentrating on what's happening on the pitch.
I wouldn't mind just that.
We'll have the fun. He can do the job.
Fair enough. But I think if you look across the whole season, he's got all the big decisions right, really. If you look at the players they brought in, obviously Molt being the big one. He could end up in the Premiership. I think Mullerwell were in for him and United got him. They got the centre-backs right, and Holt and Gallagher coming in. Docherty got the goalkeeper right. I mean, that's a lot of players you're bringing in, and big players in big positions, and they've all paid off for him. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for the work he's done this season. And he might crack a smile when they win the game.
I think that's the key thing. I think he is very much one of these, I'll crack a smile when the trophy's in my hand type managers. So,
and he'll look good holding that trophy.
It's funny you should mention. See, when you're, as supporters do, when you're measuring success on a sort of week-to-week, almost daily basis in the social media age, the criticism's always heightened, and the highs are always higher and the lows are always lower. That's never really been the case within Tannadice. Jim Goodwin keeps them very level-headed. But I think once the season's passed and we can kind of take a reflective look at the whole campaign, I do think there will be a measurement of how successful it's been, because this could have been a Shabba Laszlo season. It could have been a Raymond McKinnon season, because there were a lot of challenges to overcome. Jim Goodwin has had to completely rebuild a squad while cutting £2.6 million off the wage bill. Recruitment department effectively decimated and not particularly rebuilt. So the recruitment has been Jim Goodwin's contacts and Luigi Capuano's contacts. That's not an easy thing to do. It's not really the way big clubs are run anymore. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they have successfully rebuilt this squad in a very sensible manner while keeping costs down, while selling the players they've needed to sell, cutting costs where they've needed to cut costs, while still winning enough games to go up against a very capable Raith Rovers team who have been proper challengers, I think there's a lot there to be credited with. And yes, there's been lulls, yes, there's been a few questionable approaches to matches, but that's really micro stuff when you're looking at the macro picture of the, you know, they've cut costs, they've rebuilt, they've got promoted. That was his job. He has ticked every box on his what do you need to do this season as manager of Dundee United. So it will now be a blank slate next season and see what he can do again. But there's been a lot of challenges and a lot of things that should be considered more than just have I been entertained for that 90 minutes on that football match. Oh no, it was a draw. Goodwin out. I mean, that's just silly. Yeah. Some of the more the immediacy of the reactions. Look at the big picture. Look at the overall job that he's done as a manager, which has gone a lot bigger than most managers need to do at big clubs these days. This has been very more. Mm. There's been a lot more like the old fashioned manager of football clubs. And he's done that really well. So, and I think that will be reflected in the assessments of the seasons once, mm-hmm. once everyone takes a breath and the season's over. But it's just the nature of discourse around football is a little bit more kind of
people should learn, but will they? Because I was going to say actually, if you look at both sides of the street in Dundee, there have been some great highs this year. They've also been what you might call inexplicable no's, but maybe what sort of unites them and also explains them is they're two clubs that had major rebuilds. Basically, both had new teams this season, and that maybe explains it. Well, guys that are still getting to know each other, on the bad days, they can be very bad.
Yeah.
And there still might be only be one-offs, though.
Yeah. No, there is that, and I think there are similarities there. I think the difference now is for certainly for Jim Goodwin, and it'll be recognised by Dundee United fans as well, that they may need an influx of quite a few newer players to improve them. And that's a fact. You know, they've won the championship, they've done well, there are players there that I'm sure will do well.
There's no one here.
Well, sorry, you're jumping the gun here. I'm jumping the gun. They're going to win the championship.
Bear and I know.
They're going to win the championship, but you know what? You don't get long to dwell on success in football. No. It's a shame. It's taken a season to do it. But I'm sure if they clinch it on Saturday, there'll be questions asked to Jim Goodwin, what about next season? Yeah. What are your plans?
We've already asked him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he said he's already making his plans.
Yeah, and he'll recognise the fact, and I would suggest that they'll have another fair bit of rebuilding to do to build a team that's capable of doing well in the Premiership, but most importantly, keeping themselves in the Premiership. They've spent too long in the Championship. I think somebody said it was as 5 of the last 10 seasons have been in the Championship. Dundee have been similar to them.
Yeah.
Dundee United and Dundee are Premier League clubs. They should be up there. The fan bases, the size of clubs, they should be up there. But you have no divine right to be in there. You've got to build teams that are good enough to stay in there. And I think United do need a few new men to bolster that squad, to supplement that squad. I'm not saying the guys there haven't got a major role to play, but they do need others, and Jim Goodwin, I'm sure, will be looking at that already at this point.
Yeah, he's already said it would have been naive to not have targets identified and not have preparations in place. But obviously, it should be said he was very respectful in saying that, listen, we've not won the league yet. However,
that was me that said that. Sorry, sorry about that.
There is a Premiership blueprint there in terms of improvement, and yeah, there's going to need to be a lot done. This is sort of the end of the a cycle, if you like, in terms of there's only a handful of players that are contracted for 2025. I think Sybald will be just due to an option on his contract. Rory McLeod, Tony Watt, there's not Kai Fotheringham. So there's not many. However, I think you've got about 14 senior players that are out of contract, something like
that.
It's
the way to go kind of, now, though, isn't it, when you go down? You saw that with Dundee last year, because, I mean, Jim, you were saying he's got a Premiership blueprint. He will still have, I'm sure, a Championship blueprint now. Hopefully, as quickly as possible, he can rip the Championship one up and just concentrate on building a team for the top flight next season. But it makes, a phrase we don't often use about football clubs, but it's financially prudent to give yourself that option when you're trying to get promotion of having two choices come the summer.
It does also make it very challenging, though, because they still don't have that rebuilt recruitment department.
Yeah.
So you still are a small team, not in terms of Dundee United, small team as in personnel, trying to bring in Premiership quality players. That's why it's really positive that they will know what league they're in, hopefully potentially this weekend, but certainly by May the 3rd. That's a lot of time to start building and start tabling offers and start give people certainty. That's a real good bargaining chip. So if you've got your players identified nice and early, you can potentially get talking to them nice and early. So that's a real sort of unseen positive to all this, I would suggest. But you're going to need a new goalkeeper probably. You're going to need competition for Scott McMahon at left back, because I would keep Scott McMahon. Centre halves, Kevin Holt's out of contract coming back from a injury. Declan Gallagher's battling a wee injury. So you're two starting centre backs at the moment, one's on loan. You need depth in midfield. You need another striker to supplement Molt, who I think will stay, and Tony Watt. So there's a lot to be done there. And then there's question marks regarding
Jim Goodwin's just put the champagne back in the cupboard. Listen, I'm too busy.
and then you've still got questions regarding, you know, could there potentially be the prospect of investment from elsewhere that could slightly change the picture of things? So it's a fascinating and, I suspect, really, really, really busy summer ahead. I'm just fascinated to see how it all pans out. I don't think it's disastrous, the level of kind of rebuilding that needs done, because I think you can look at Middleton, Fotheringham, Watt, Molt, Docherty, Sibbald, McMahon, Declan Gallagher, and say there are some good players there that I have no problem going into a Premiership season with. But that's not a squad. That's a.
I think the key word you said is depth.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the key.
You would say they need another experienced centre half, just because what's happened to Gallagher and Kevin Holt.
Well, they need loads, as a just kind of everything that I just kind of listed there, and that's just off the top of my head. I've not even got anything written down, so I am just kind of that's sort of literally off the top of my head. So it's as Bear says, it's about depth, but not only that. See, in the championship, it's. That depth was enough to kind of get them through. See, in the Premiership, that depth also has to be quality. You need to any player that you bring in to be a Premiership quality footballer, and that's where there'll probably be a lot of business to be done. So, interesting and very busy times ahead and very challenging times ahead. But it's exciting. It's exciting. It's where they wanted to get back to. It's the level they want to be testing themselves at, and. I'm sure if they do a similar level and standard of business that Jim Goodwin and Luigi Capuano managed to do last summer, then they'll have a good crack at it.
And getting ahead of ourselves, because we're allowed, managers and players aren't. You'd hope as well, given all you've said there about the work Jim Goodwin and Luigi Capuano have done, if there's a lull, which inevitably there will be a lull at some point next season, hopefully Mark Ogren first and foremost, but hopefully the fans as well remember what they've done. They've helped them. They've been successful, and they've helped the club save a lot of money, or reduce their spending vastly. And it should be. It never is in football. So maybe I don't even know why I'm saying this, because the fans will quickly forget if they lose two or three games in a row next season. But. They've done a lot for that club, haven't they?
I think so. I mean, look, it's a brave call. If you're a Premiership club like Dundee or Dundee United and you're relegated, it's a brave call in the Championship to say, we're going to stick with the squad, we're going to enhance the squad, we're going to still play, you know, top dollar wages, because the big fear is, Tom, that at the end of that 12 months, you're still in the Championship, we've seen before, and it's an absolute financial disaster. And we've seen and sort of recent weeks, you know, the finances at both clubs, they're millions of pounds, losing millions of pounds over the course of a season. And that can't be sustained in the Championship, but you do have a chance to level things off if you're in the Premiership, but you need a sustained period in the Premiership. And I always say to the fans who are quick to criticise, look at the balance sheet at the end of the season. Who's picking up that tab? I mean, the fans pay their season tickets and things like that. It goes nowhere near to covering the cost to run a football club if you're in the second tier in Scotland.
Yeah, and I think it's worth probably saying that should the sort of ownership picture and income picture remain the same and there's no external investment, next season the expectation should be more of a Mickey Mellon season than a Tamcourt season.
Yeah.
I think it is worth saying that there. Mark Ogren could not have been clearer recently. He doesn't want to hemorrhage any more money. So there will be an element of that will continue if nothing changes in terms of the ownership structure at Dundee United. So I think that level of expectation should hang over the season when we're talking about potential criticisms or anything. But as I say, that's if nothing changes kind of in the hierarchy, because there just won't be loads and loads of money to spend. There'll be enough to put together a competitive squad, because Dundee United can make decent money in the Premiership. They have great crowds, and the sponsorship will go up and the commercial will go up, and there will be scope to sign decent players. However, if it's still just Mark Ogren there signing the cheques, then it's difficult to foresee them putting together a squad that can immediately surge into the top six.
Yeah. As Bear says, United, I mean, here's maybe a message to fans. Any club, United should be a top six club.
Mm-hmm.
I've no doubts about that whatsoever. But when your club spent half the last decade in a lower division, you can't expect that to happen straight away. To get back to where they should be, if it takes two or three seasons, fans hopefully will accept that. You don't want to see them in relegation trouble, but I mean, a bit like Dundee, but maybe slightly less so, given Dundee have been up and down for a lot longer. For me, assuming United win promotion, eighth place and never been in relegation trouble would be a good season next year. Small, I mean, if they go higher, fine, but you have to say
small steps, Tom, and unfortunately, it's not Dundee United fans' fault. It's what the club did in the 80s and the 90s. The expectation levels are still that United should be top six, possibly even higher. You know, that's expectation, but you know, I would urge fans
takes time
to temper that. Yeah, temper that. You know, like you just said, eighth without being in any sort of real bother would be a decent start. You know, they've got to bring in new faces. We saw that at Dundee last season. Tony Docherty identified the fact that Dundee were far too lightweight. Certain players weren't good enough for that level, and he beefed the squad up. You know, he brought in the goalkeepers, he brought in Lamy, he brought in Shaughnessy, he brings in Curtis Main, Baki Yoko, Mo Silla, and the beef they scored up big style. And I think Dundee United need to do a bit of that as well. I'm looking at them, I think when I look, and they've got some terrific players there, but they need supplemented by good seasoned pros who can, you know, make sure that they don't get run over the top of in the Premier League. And expectation levels should sort of reflect that, Tom.
Yeah. Since Bear started, lads, we might as well switch over the road now to Dundee anyway. Well, George, just to follow on what Bear was saying, I mean, interestingly, on that theme, I think one of the first things Tony Docherty said is this is beyond, we've overachieved, we're beyond expectations, we've made the top six. And the aim for the season was always to stay in the Premier League. And I must admit, I was shouting at the radio after Motherwell scored an unbelievable goal, I have to say. To put Dundee in the top six if they could see out the game at Pittodrie. But the first thing I thought when I heard them say that's full time was we're not getting relegated. And I don't. That's not me being negative, because that was the aim for the season. Don't get relegated.
It's the best way to not get relegated, I would say.
Absolutely.
And well deserved over the season. League table doesn't lie, as they say. And they
were, I did. Sorry, that was a personal. That's nothing to do with football.
They've deservedly booked their place in the top six. With two, well, since we did the last podcast, hasn't been a goal scored in any Dundee match. But
still, you would never have believed that. Wait, if somebody said that they're going to put, at the start of the season, you said they're going to Pittodrie and then they've got Rangers at home when Rangers are chasing the title, you won't see a goal scored. Yeah. So, well, do you mean a Dundee goal scored?
I mean, it might be the biggest pair of 0-0 draws Dundee have ever had, I think, because obviously achieved top six, but the Rangers won last night as we're recording on Thursday. It just gives them huge belief that they can go and catch some Mirren and take that fifth place, which they haven't done.
Which might get into Europe.
It could well get into Europe. I think
somebody explained
will.
This to me yesterday, and I was like, oh, don't understand.
Well, if the team that wins the Scottish Cup has already achieved the European place through the league, that place from the Scottish Cup moves into the league. Does that make sense? I've totally messed it up.
I repeat my earlier statement.
That's correct. That's correct.
So Celtic, Rangers and Hearts are already...
Just tell me if they're there.
They are already guaranteed European football this season by the way they are in the league. If Aberdeen go and win the Scottish Cup, then that'll take away that fifth place for Europe. So...
Pigs might fly.
Yeah, I can't see Aberdeen winning that cup, I have to say.
Because you have to say, although it was 0-0 at Pittodrie last week when Dundee clinched it, the second half in particular, I don't think Dundee have possibly ever dominated the game that much.
It's been a long, long time since I've seen a Dundee side dominate a football match at Pittodrie so much. So, I mean, the games prior to that, St Johnstone and Motherwell, Dundee, I thought they were looking a wee bit leggy. They got the result against St Johnstone. I guess Motherwell, they looked a bit dead. And I said this to you last week, Tom. I think they're looking, the key men are looking a wee bit out on their feet. Hmm. So, you know, the fact that the Rangers game was off in midweek, I think Dundee did a few favours in as much as they went to Pittodrie.
The conspiracy theories.
They went to Pittodrie. They knew what they had to do, but they had the energy to go and do it, and they were fantastic. They were brilliant. First half, it was eeksy-peeksy. The second half, Dundee absolutely murdered Aberdeen, and the big disappointment was they didn't actually get the win they probably deserved, but Shane Blaney, a name that's going to live long in the memory of Dundee supporters, because...
My player of the year.
It was great. I mean,
Dundee's goal of the season.
You're in the crowd, it must have been about 10-5, and, you know, Dundee are pressing for a goal. Tony Doherty's... He's got all the strikers on back of Yoko, Curtis Main, Michael Mellon. They're all on the pitch. And then suddenly, Motherwell score. And the Dundee fans are giving it Donto. And suddenly, Tony Doherty's trying to get the defenders on. Very quickly, Dodson was on. Ricky Lamy was on. Back of Yoko was off. But they thoroughly deserved it. And then, you know, great to go and follow that up with the result against Rangers last night. I thought that they thoroughly merited it. And, you know, I think if they'd had a wee bit more belief in themselves... Clement
does not think so.
No, well, I saw what he was saying. And I'll be honest with you, I thought that, you know, McCracken had a decent game in the Dundee, but I didn't think he pulled off any saves that I wouldn't have expected him. I mean, maybe the one early on he saved with his feet. That might have changed the course of the flow of the game. But in general, I thought Dundee performed very well. Tony Doherty had them set up brilliantly. They were leaving Goldson on the ball all the time. He was allowed to run 20, 30, 40 yards into Dundee half and did absolutely nothing with it. And then Dundee actually looked good when they got in possession on the ball. Looked as though they could do something.
First half especially, I thought they were really, really good first half.
Just to interject here, to defend Goldson and his type of defenders, I always feel these guys are let down by their teammates in those situations, because you know that they're the guys that are in there for their defensive qualities. But the opposition will try to leave them with the ball because they're not the best footballers.
That's right. But Dundee set up to make that happen, and it did. It worked perfectly. And as a result, you know, Rangers' key men, Tavernier, and never really got on the ball in decent areas to do anything with it. I thought if Dundee's shown a wee bit more quality, a wee bit more composure inside the last 10 minutes, I thought they could have won the game. And we've had a couple of opportunities. Dara Costello had a great opportunity, and he decides to pass the ball to Curtis Main, which is beyond me when he's in the middle of the box and should just put his laces through it. But there were a few things, if the breaks had gone their way, a wee bit more composure, they might have actually won the game. But, I'm not Celtic or Rangers. That doesn't interest me. I mean, as a Dundee fan, you know, the most important thing is how Dundee played. But given what had gone on in the last couple of weeks with postponements and all this sort of vitriol that's been sort of thrown Dundee's way. I must have been satisfying. It was satisfying for the fans. It must have been satisfying for Tony Docher and his players to come off that park last night by result.
Yeah, just on all the vitriol, it sort of occurred to me over the recent days, and I like him and think he's done a great job. But if you compare the way Clermont's got involved, with all the nonsense over the park, and the way that Tony Docherty's stayed out of it, and I think I don't disagree with anything that Clermont was saying, but Rangers, you could have let Rangers as a club say all that. And I think it looks better for, especially when he's had a bad week in terms of results, it looks better what the way Tony Docherty has approached it, say, well, let the people, that's their job. Mm-hmm. Let the people, they prepare the pitch for us to play on, we play on it, I prepare the team. And I think it might have been better if he'd approached the same way, because he's weakened his position a bit.
Yeah, I think so. And post-match after the game last night, Tony Docherty was asked about Clermont's comments about Rangers being the only team that deserved to win the game. He obviously disagreed and very quickly moved on to, it's my job as manager to ensure my team is focused only on the game in hand, which is obviously a wee dig at Rangers. And the interesting post-match comments at Ross County when he somehow blamed Dundee's pitch for them getting beat at Ross County. But I think it did get in Rangers' heads with the whole pitch thing, the whole furore. I think even in the tactics.
For a start, I'm not saying it's a big thing, but players are human, and they'll sit in the dressing room when their manager's gone off on about something, however justified, they will discuss that. And really, you don't want the players getting involved in that, do you? You want the players.
Even the way Rangers played, they played as if the pitch was impossible to play on. They played as if, right, this is going to be a swamp, a bog. You're going to be unable to play the nice football that Rangers are capable of because they've got fine players. So we'll just shell it diagonally and look to play off seconds.
They did that immediately.
And I was looking at the pitch going, Rangers can play some football on this if they choose to, but they seem to be actively not.
That's the one thing about the pitch. No one's complained about it when the games have gone on, particularly. It's not a great pitch, but no one's come off and said, how do you play football on that pitch? It's the times when rain that doesn't put games off elsewhere makes that pitch unplayable. It's been the problem.
I just wonder if in his team talk he overplayed the way the pitch was going to be, and the players are obviously taking that on board and taking no chances. The Motherwell game a couple of weeks ago, you could see the pitch was worse then, and the players took few chances at the back, but they could play last night. And Dundee played a bit.
Yeah, and there was plenty of grass on it. Yeah. And it was a damp pitch. It was a nice surface. There's a couple of areas that are a wee bit touch and go, but not, you know, nothing drastic. And Dundee showed you could play a bit of football on it. But, you know, as Alan says, Rangers have got a lot of good footballers there, but they decided to play it a different way.
Footballers will go out in a park. They can differentiate between a pitch that overall you can't play football on and recognise a pitch where some areas aren't great. And again, that's not exonerating Dundee, because their pitch should be much better across the whole surface.
But I think Dundee's performance was almost ideal for playing the Old Firm.
Yeah.
Defended really, really well.
Which was good, considering Joe Shaughnessy went off after about 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, went to hear on that, but it didn't look good. Nobody near me turned, and immediately fell at his knee, which is never a good sign. And he's started every single game this season, so that is a big blow. But I thought Antonio Portales came on. I don't think he's actually been used in a back four. I think it's always been a back three that he's been used in. So that was interesting. But I thought he was absolutely excellent.
Yeah, he was outstanding.
And he's had a great season.
Yeah,
he's had a few injury problems, but when he's played generally,
it's just very strong.
Yeah.
I think you notice. I think when he went off at Ibrox that day, and he was out for a couple of months, Dundee started leaking goals almost instantly. So he does bring something to the team. There's no doubt about that. But he can play as well. He likes to get the ball down, and he can pass it. He passes it well. And in general, Dundee did try to play time, and you've got to do that against Rangers, because otherwise the ball just keeps coming back.
Well, that started to happen in the second half. You could see it didn't quite stick with Bakayoko and Tiffany. They just couldn't keep up the top end of the park when they had good chances to do so. And immediately Tony Docherty changed it, put Curtis Main on, and Costello, who we'll say, didn't have his best game, shall we say.
I think he gave the ball away four times in his first five passes. Yeah. He was just a wee bit too eager, I think.
Yeah.
For some reason, maybe it was they were playing Rangers, he was just a little bit too eager in some of the passes he was trying to play. I always think, if you play two bad passes, Tam, your next pass is a five-yard pass. You keep it simple.
Sure.
Yeah, you make sure you play two or three good passes, but every pass seemed to get more and more difficult, and as a result, he was giving the ball away. I'm sure the manager let him know from the touchline.
Well, that you could see him.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Interesting, though, that Doherty changed his system.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's been back three, back five, all pretty much most of the season. Within 10, 15 minutes, Aberdeen, he ditched it. Because Aberdeen were the better team right at the start, and he immediately went to a back four, and it seemed to settle him down. He stuck with the back four last night against Rangers. I think it was basically a 4-1-4-1. So that's interesting. He's tweaked things, and it seems to have settled the team. They looked so assured in the back five previously this season, but
an interesting one last night was the fact that he played Boateng and Solitaire.
Yeah,
because
Boateng was right wing.
Came on in the second half. Solitaire to me looks as though he struggles to get through games sometimes. He puts a lot of energy in.
Yeah.
He was taken off at half time, but Boateng came on and was outstanding because Dundee were pressing the game. Mm-hmm. Tam, I've always said that about Boateng. If Dundee are going forward in games, he's the right man to play because he passes the ball quick. He can move it early. But they were both on together last night. We've not seen that much this season, George, but it worked quite well.
But he stuck Boateng on right wing, which was a wee bit of a surprise, but I thought he was really good again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Almost scored within 30 seconds as well. Mm-hmm.
Credit to the doyen, that is the doc. Because, again, he seems to be... His man management must be very good because he seems to be able to leave players like Boateng, and he's done it while he's out for a few weeks at a time, and then he comes back and they put in a right shift, both in terms of effort and quality, whereas a lot of players, especially loan players, the laddie Boateng could be thinking, wonder what's happening to me at Crystal Palace back in the summer.
Yeah. Well, it looked like quite a close-knit squad, and it should be. It's been a good season for them. They've still got a few games to go, but it has been a good season. But even the guys who have been left out for periods of time, like you say, still come on, still put in a shift. For a long period this season, Scott Tiffany couldn't get a game. Now he can't. He's the first name on the team sheet. And I still think that Scott Tiffany has got more to offer in terms of quality. I think he can prove that. But what he shows in every is the desire to keep going and keep going and keep going. He's like the sort of Duracell bunny, Tom. He just does not stop. And that's why he's in the team every single week. But the whole squad's like, I mean, Michael Mellon came up and, you know, hit the ground running, and we thought, he's going to be outstanding up here, but he's hardly had a look in as well. But he plays with a smile on his face. He's still a young lad, but you see him when he comes on, you know, he puts a shift in. But hopefully they'll all get a chance in the final few games to show what they can do. And as George says, they've put themselves in with an opportunity to catch St Mirren. St Mirren have to come to Dens, and you know, Dundee turned them over at Dens earlier on in the season. So it keeps it interesting. It's good. It's great because what you don't want is you're in the top six, but you're that far adrift than the other teams. That the game's really it's just a wind down to the end of the season. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Right. On the squad and the kind of mentality around it and the camaraderie with the players, that's been something we talked to Tony Doherty this week about, and it's something that him and his his staff have specifically worked on that to ensure that all the players coming in can get on together basically and make sure that days like Saturday Aberdeen that the players get to celebrate together, quickly move on to concentrating on the next game. But they've got a free weekend this weekend. I think they're having a golf day, they're having all these sorts of things.
I've got to say, just going back to Aberdeen, if ever there's a lesson to be learned about changing your manager mid-season and not having a plan B in place, that's it. Because you're not telling me, Aberdeen to me, look, they've got some decent players, but they looked absolutely rudderless. And that's not I'm not throwing dirt at Peter Leaven, who's been thrown in there.
No, he's been thrown.
It's not at him.
It's not his job.
You're not telling me that Barry Robson wouldn't have done just as well in the situation that Aberdeen now find themselves in. I'll tell you what, they'd better watch themselves because they looked absolutely rudderless against Dundee, and the new guy's not coming in until June. So
if he could be by Ross County.
Well,
Barry Robson was at the game last night at the end.
Was he?
Good.
Yeah.
Which, when we were discussing the big picture assessment of the season in the Dundee United section, I think it'll be, once we take a step back and look at the big picture assessment of Dundee's season, I think because of the success St Mirren and Kilmarnock have had, Tony Docherty's success maybe outside of, you know, this podcast and this city has gone slightly under the radar, because if you think back to last summer, it was plenty of scepticism regarding that appointment.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
he wasn't the perceived as the first choice. There had been advanced talks with Callum Davidson. Never managed a football team before. They'd hardly any players on the books. So it's worth seeing the success that's happened. Mm-hmm. Top six football, he's shown himself to be a good man manager, versatile tactically, has built a decent squad and has enjoyed a fine season. I think once it comes to, you know, having a proper sort of, you know, big picture look at this season, he's been one of Scottish football's success stories in terms of his management this season.
Well, I mean, I think, speaking off the top of my head, but I think they're only maybe a few results, two or three maybe, away from being Dundee's best season in kind of recent memory for proper decades, I think. And
I have to say, I'm looking at the table here, for a Dundee team to have 41 points in the Premier League from 33 games, having dropped 22 points from winning positions, absolutely blows my mind. It really does. It's amazing. It's amazing that a negative fact can leave you feeling so positive, but they've got 41 points and it could have been more.
Maybe that's why Tony Docherty was so delighted with the fact that they've managed to have two clean sheets in the last couple of games, because it shows another side to them.
They've done that a few times, haven't they? They bounce back. But just going at Alan's point about kind of going under the radar, I think maybe part of that is because Dundee haven't been on TV at all. It was only their second game last night. The last one was against Celtic and they got kind of turned over.
That's not Sky's fault. Or it is the Sky's fault.
Well, they could have chosen Dundee games, because I think anyone who's seen Dundee this season knows that they're
worth the money.
So they haven't been given the chance to shine on the box. Although I did notice Sky Sports preview. They did their old classic mistake. They had a picture of Luke McCowan and Tavernier and it said Dundee v Rangers, everything was fine, but if you look at the background picture, it was not Dens Park, it was Tannadice Park.
Well, maybe that'll force them into a change of mind. I was going to come, I mean, reaching the top six and drawing with Rangers has certainly softened the blow that is inevitably to come when they'll be fined, but it also looks like when the TV money is handed out at the end of the season, Dundee are going to get a bit less because Sky don't want to pay for this game. And I know that the other clubs don't want to see their share of the pot reduced because of that. So it looks like Dundee are going to get a hit.
Yeah, I mean, I'd if I was in Dundee's shoes, I'd tell Sky to get stuffed. I have to say, I mean, if you're going to cover football, there's going to be a risk that games get called off. I mean,
we'll have to, obviously, because of our nomination and who we're up against. Yeah. We'll have to declare a bit of bias here. Yeah. Those Sky Rotters deserve nothing. Although if they want to get less money, they can. Just don't get an award.
And I think I would point to that thing that I said about the graphic and the constant. I would say it's disrespect to Dundee and Dundee United for continually getting the teams mixed up and the wrong badges and the wrong pictures and all this sort of stuff. Get that sorted and then ask for your money.
I have to say.
I'll be interested to see what actually happens. Is it Friday the meeting?
Today.
It's today. So we should find out later today what's happening. Hopefully. I would expect that we'd get more than Motherwell got a few
breaking
years.
Breaking news, Bear, for all you out there watching and listening, we can reveal Dundee have been fined. Fill in the amount yourselves.
they're going to get it in the neck. But I thought some of the criticism was mile over the top. And, you know, the good thing is they're guaranteed sixth spot, so hopefully that any sort of fine, you know, the money they get from the SPFL will be covered in the extra money they'll get for finishing in the top six. But I hope that you know, that the governing body, you know, Dundee deserve criticism for it, and they have to. The most important thing is to get it sorted, Tom.
You know,
but they've got to get the pitch sorted.
On that point, you mate, I think and Bear and George are allowed to laugh at this coming from me, but having worked day to day with me for years, there is a way to express your dissatisfaction and concern. I'm not saying they should lessen their fine. I'm not saying they should let Dundee off, but it's been it has got a wee bit hysterical from the league as well. And you're allowed to just calmly say, guys, this isn't been good enough for your pitch, and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
But it's been, oh my God, what's this?
So
it's still two postponements at one game.
Yeah, they're so in throw to Sky that because Sky have been so upset, they've been stung into action.
And Rangers as well.
And Rangers are upset, yeah. If any combination of Rangers, Celtic or Sky Sports are upset, then the SPFL will, I would suggest, take things exceptionally seriously.
Just ask St Johnstone when they made their feelings known about the game getting called off at the turn of the year. Nobody really noticed.
Yeah. But just, I mean, on the subject of the league, Alan and I disagreed last week whether you could have an inspection and then make a decision based on the weather forecast ahead. Now, we won't go over that old ground, but the league, a week ago, had an inspection based on the conditions there and then on Tuesday this week, had an inspection based on the condition of the pitch and the weather forecast. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, you can agree or disagree which is the best way to do it, but you shouldn't be doing it one way one week and the other way the other week.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of consistency, so they don't escape criticism either, do they?
There's an element of making everything up as everybody goes along. Yeah, just at this moment. Even that story,
I won't criticise them for that.
Even that story about, you know, if Sky Sports demand money back from the SPFL, it'll be taken off Dundee. Like, that sounds very making it up as you go along, doesn't it? Like, what form is that going to take, that it won't be a breach of contract? Are they going to perhaps at this hearing fine Dundee what they suspect they might have to pay back to Sky Sports? Is that the way they're going to effectively do it? Because done any other way, I don't see how that can't be a sort of, as I say, making it up as you go along and you know, potentially breach of a contract.
To do it by giving Dundee less money than everyone else opens themselves up to a challenge.
Yeah.
So they're taking, I mean, Dundee might go, look, the decent thing to do is just say, aye, okay. But if they don't, then the league have got a problem, haven't they?
Then again, I mean, I'm spitballing that just sounds a tad impromptu, but maybe there are.
Scottish football.
I've not read the terms of the contract, so maybe there is provisions for that sort of thing. But it sounds very impromptu to me.
And another thing, time's running out, so we need to move on to the post-split fixtures. But to keep it that way, and call me sleek or devious, as you always have done,
called
George.
Yes,
I know. But to me, I think Dundee have got excellent post-split fixtures. If I was at the league, I would be giving them rubbish ones.
Well, I can't believe they missed a chance to send Rangers back to Hens Park. I mean, imagine the reaction from the everybody, the Rangers fans particularly.
Absolutely. After all, no way Rangers were getting sent back to Hens Park. That was never happening, George.
I think I would have supported Philip Clement to intervene then. It's like, come on, guys, eh?
It just would have been funny. But I think Dundee would be fairly pleased with their fixtures. They wanted, Tony Dorcott certainly wanted, three home games. Interesting they've put the two of them right at the start, so just in case there's any issues with the pitch, there's some time to get them played. But you've got St Mirren and Kilmarnock at home. If you're going to pick two fixtures at home out of the five, you want those two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking at people that stick the knife in Dundee, but I have to be honest, if I was making these fixtures, I would have tried not to give Dundee a home game against one of the Old Firm when the league title was up for grabs, because that's a bumper payday.
Yeah.
And I'm great for Dundee, good luck to them, but I just, maybe it's my warped way of thinking, but I just see there was an opportunity there for the league to say, well, we're not doing you any favours, but I mean, Celtic at home on the 28th of April is a great money-spinning fixture for Dundee.
Not
other clubs
sports,
will be thinking, well,
I think, as we may suspect, but, you know, I think the first thing to look at is Celtic and Rangers, and everything else spins off that, off their Old Firm game.
And to be fair, maybe the league are just better human beings than I am.
And they're also, we have this weird, you know, due to factors, issue in this country that the league almost all would like the title to be sorted and done and dusted as early as possible.
Yes.
So I'm not particularly surprised that Celtic have been, Celtic and Rangers have been, you know, given potentially winnable games, because I think they would like as many points racked up as possible, so that they have a less chance of Rangers against Celtic being a title decider, which is a shame that you're in that position.
Yeah,
but,
you're right, because surely that's the game Sky Sports would love. Mm-hmm. The title decider, the Old Firm clash on the last day of the season, if that was the way that panned out.
It's a shame, it's a shame that
we can't do it. We can't do it in this country.
It really is a crying shame that the country is as such, that that's something that's actively avoided. I would love to see if there's any other country in the world that actively avoids title deciders.
Yeah, it must be a difficult way to work out fixtures. Mm-hmm. You actually have to start with one specific game and then build from there rather than, you know, look at the whole picture. Yeah.
But it is what it is. Not our problem.
From Dundee's point of view, home game in the last day of the season, that's what you want. Celebrate what's been a great season, whether they get fifth or sixth.
I was going to say, I mean, hopefully they get a good crowd that day, because, and hopefully they're still trying to secure the spot that might give them European football.
Yeah. Even if it's not European football, it's worth reminding. You know, I think exactly. I don't have the figures off the top of my head, but between sixth and fifth, you're probably looking at a couple of hundred grand in prize money. Yeah. Absolutely not to be sniffed at. So
half a pitch, as they call it.
Well, if that's what it needs to be used for, then you know, better to pay for it out of prize money if it's going to need to get paid for somehow. You know,
well, that's the opportunity they've given themselves by getting in the top six. Plus, as you say, the big payday with Celtic coming to Dens next time, and you got to think the home crowd's going to be really big for these. Certainly, the St Mirren game.
I hope so. Even for the Celtic, I think Dundee. I'll be honest with you, I think Dundee have deserved a wee bit more people watching them. The home crowd has held up, Tom, as we've always said through the years, because the amount of time they've spent in the Championship, the fan base has stayed solid, but it has never really grown much when they've gone up to the Premier League. Now, I can understand that, because a lot of the times they've gone up and they've struggled big time in the Premier League and then probably gone straight back down again. But this season, the quality of football has been really good. They've got some really good...
You're having a go at me for listening on the radio.
They've got some really good young players. I think they deserve a few more fans going along to watch.
I think last night's performance might help on that front. Because I noticed that the Bobby Cox looked a little lighter than usual. Yeah. But the main stand was pretty busy. I just wonder whether the old kind of fatigue of going to see your team get pummeled by the Old Firm...
That does take a toll.
And you can... If you start getting results against them, though, that turns in it, and suddenly people start believing. Coming back and believing that they can go and turn them over and very much enjoy it.
Well, guys, I have to thank you all for curing me of my hangover. That was fine. Nay, potentially award-winning stuff.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of the Telly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice,